This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
Listening to Keyboard Kimura, the official mixed martial arts podcast of The Province. Here are your hosts, Paul Chapman and E. Spencer Kite.
Welcome to Province Sports Radio, Keyboard Kimura Edition. I'm Paul Chapman, joined by Spencer Kite, as usual, trying to get back into our fall routine here. The theme for us at Province Sports, Spencer, has been what a wonderful time of year, because you got the NFL starts this week. You have, you know, Whitecaps and Lions sort of in this meaty part of their season. That's the local stuff. But, you know, you got the Seahawks going. Canucks training camp is right around the corner. Baseball playoffs heating up. And then you throw in events like the UFC, like the big events. And it just seems like this is, as the kids head back to school, as activities start, as people burn off all their vacation, it seems like this is the time where sports fans can just sit on the couch and rejoice. So let's start off with traditionally, I would say, you know, there are weeks where, or traditionally, I think over the years, there are fight cards or times of year, which are big ones. It seems like early January, we get a big card. We know about Memorial Day weekend. Typically, either the July or August seems to have a big pay-per-view. And in the past, Labor Day, I'm thinking back to, you know, we've seen Jon Jones have a fight on that weekend, the great fight against Gustafson. It's kind of like sets up this big sports season. I was underwhelmed and disappointed at the last pay-per-view. I don't know if you feel the same way. I'm guessing not. That's just a general malaise, and we'll get into some of the reasons why. But what did you take away from the pay-per-view? Did you like it? Didn't you?
It was sort of just a B effort for me. I mean, it didn't have the same energy and excitement that sort of ran through the last couple of cards in Las Vegas, obviously, which were big spectaculars with two title fights on the main card and just this proliferation of great names and great fights. There were some really good moments. There were some really entertaining elements. I thought Raquel Pennington's fight with Jess Andrade was really good. I thought the bantamweight nuclear warfare show between John Lineker and Cisco Rivera was everything I expected it to be, throwing a combined 100 punches in 2 minutes and 8 seconds, which was just great. But everything else kind of just, like, the heavyweights really underwhelmed. That turned into a kind of a slop fest where there were moments where they just, I know somebody put out a vine of, like, don't ever forget the great action between Frank Mir and Andrei Arlovsky. And it's Frank Mir just standing there static and Arlovsky fainting at the air in round two. And so when you get that, then you have DJ, who to me puts on a masterful performance. But I get, as we've talked about ad nauseum on this podcast, sort of the lack of interest or the lack of real support for those kind of performances. It ends up falling flat. It ends up being a night where you walk away and you get to the post-fight press conference. And it's like, you know, there's nothing really super buzzy about this show that has me amped up with 6, 8, 10, 12 questions that I want to ask. It was just kind of like, yeah, that was an event that happened. It was good. It wasn't horrible by any stretch, but it wasn't a major, it was going to pale in comparison to the last few Las Vegas shows anyways, but it didn't hit all the high notes that it could have, I will say.
Well, okay. So let's let's be honest about this. It's not that we differ in agreements. It's just, we have different tastes when it comes to the little guys. Say that to be demeaning. You know, you have been very clear all along that you really do have this admiration for Demetrius Johnson, as do I, in the fact that he is a spectacular technical fighter. I think the personality end of it is overblown. Just how people will say, you know, Conor McGregor is all hype, or DJ should be more interesting. I think ultimately it's the action that goes on, and I think that fight gave us what we expected. Two guys who threw at a tremendous work rate. But it's just, there's not the power, there's not the punishment there that people love to see. And when we've talked about these events before, and we've been spoiled, and we talk about whether it's on TV or whatever, it boggles my mind, Spencer, that whether the criticism is deserved or not, they keep putting DJ in this position to carry a pay-per-view by himself when people just aren't interested. And part of that is the guys that he's fighting, he's run through them all before. Dodson was as good as it gets. So what was compelling people to buy that pay-per-view? Intriguing to see two heavyweights who had had good stories behind them? Fair enough. But ultimately, why should I have cared about that pay-per-view? And I think the UFC made a huge mistake here.
And I think they did as well. And I mean, we talked about it sort of going in. And I know Danny and I touched on it last week when we taped the show down in Vegas, that DJ himself had come out and said, like, put me as the co-main event. I'm tired of answering these questions. I'm tired of hearing this criticism. So just put me as the co-main event and let me sort of stand amongst these other great fighters and measure off against that instead of being the guy that's required to do the heavy lifting when people don't seem to be interested. It's interesting. I mean, Ben Folks wrote a great piece for MMA Junkie talking about sort of what we look for as fight of the night. So John Lineker and Cisco Rivera get fight of their night for their 2-minute and 8-second smoke show where they're just digging their toes. And he had some quotes from DJ about it where DJ was saying, like, he's backstage and he's watching that fight and thinks, yeah, they're slinging, but I don't want to get hit that much. And I think that's a big part of it that is going to hopefully, like, I would, if I heard that criticism more of, like, he doesn't necessarily want to engage and people just don't, like, if people were just honest and said, I want to see two dudes dig their toes in and collar tie with each other and just throw, like, hockey fight style, cool, I'm in. But when you, if you're going to talk about technical elements and praise other guys, DJ has to be in there. But I get it because, you know, DJ's comment after the fight is, look how pretty I look, not a mark on me. That's what he's going for. And I get that there's a ton of people that don't necessarily favor that, that aren't necessarily going to shell out $60 for that. I agree that the UFC didn't do him any favors. I hope for his sake that his next fight, whoever it is against, is either the co-main event of a pay-per-view or back on Fox, even on Fox Sports 1, where we see them going there with TJ Dillashaw and Dominic Cruz in January, which we'll touch on later. Maybe that just has to be the way you go with DJ for now.
Absolutely. I think if you give him that position where he's got to be tired of constantly eating that criticism when all he does is he goes out and wins, but the rest of the card really did underwhelm. I mean, again, you have this great story in these two heavyweights who people didn't really expect to be where they were, and it probably made sense to make them fight each other. But, man, I'll tell you, that to me was much more of a fight night than some of the fights that we're seeing that are on fight nights that are pay-per-views. And again, hindsight's everything, but you end up with Rory and Robbie on the same card as Conor McGregor, and you look at this one and you go, right, wouldn't it made more sense to either have the DJ fight there or one of those here?
Well, and that's sort of the way that I continue to look at it. Like, I love that the UFC is trying to bulk up some of these shows. And, like, I love the Australia card with Ronda Rousey and of both females together. First time that's happened. Ronda has the power to bolster Joanna's standing. You didn't necessarily need Conor McGregor to bolster the interest and excitement in Robbie Lawler, Rory McDonald, where it could have brought some more attention to DJ and Dodson or whoever he was fighting. And I mean, as far as Arlovsky and Mir, that's a fight that I think most of us within the MMA community were kind of caught off guard with because we expected Andre Arlovsky to be the next guy in line for the title shot. You're not going to get many opportunities with him on this winning streak, on this resurgence. He's got a history with Fabricio Werdum. It just didn't make sense to anybody to pair these two guys on a similar course and run back a rematch with Cain Velasquez, who got beaten handily. And so it kind of felt like the MMA gods maybe a little bit gave us not what we were expecting, but what we deserve for making a fight that didn't necessarily make sense. Because now the heavyweight division's kind of stalled again, which just, you know, prior to this fight, felt like we weren't in that position. Everything was moving in the right direction.
Yeah,
so.
And Arlovsky was kind of an intriguing name that could be thrown out there into the mix, whereas, you know, regardless of the result, it's like his momentum's gone now. Like, what did either of them...
And that's the thing, both, is like,
No, I was going to say, sorry, man, that they both, to your point, they both kind of fought that fight like they had everything to lose and nothing to gain by going out and putting on a great show.
Right. They both come in off big knockout finishes, two in a row for each of them, where everything is going well. And it becomes, they both understand that this may be my last chance to get into this title picture. So they kind of pull back. And Arlovski said after the fact that he underestimated Frank Mir and didn't think he was going to be that tough. And like, at this stage in your career, at this level, you can't be underestimating anybody. You can't be taking fights off. You need to go out there and have a killer performance. Because if he goes out and blisters Frank Mir, he probably gets the opportunity to just kind of wait and call his shot next. Whereas coming off of this fight, it's a strong likelihood that he's going to have to fight again, especially if Verdum Velasquez 2 doesn't happen until March, as Dana said. That means he's probably going to have to fight Stipe Miocic or Junior Dos Santos or one of those guys. And I don't like his chances there. So he just went from being probably the guy that deserved the next shot or had done enough to earn the next interesting shot to a guy that's going to be the underdog in a pair of really bad matchups.
Yeah, it is funny. Sometimes a card jumps out and surprises you, and you know, sometimes they underwhelm. And this one, unfortunately, was kind of exactly what I thought it would be. Now, there was another big name that fought in Anthony Johnson. And again, it was good to see him, you know, gain back some momentum after, you know, get the mess around his last title shot with John Jones and the suspension fighting Cormier. But again, and I'm not – look, anyone who gets in the octagon is a tough guy. But that wasn't a marquee matchup to me. And it kind of, you know, again, the fight underwhelmed. We saw Rumble's power, but, you know, where does that fight leave us in the light heavyweight division? I mean, how did you feel about that? I know you loved Rumble a bit.
Yeah, that's the thing for me is, like, I didn't have any expectations of Jimmy Manua beating him here. And I think that this very much was and talked about it on the site and talked about it on the podcast last week. This very much was a showcase kind of get right fight for Anthony Johnson. Came out, showed a little bit of sort of going back to some wrestling. He does have a wrestling background way back in his high school days. Been working with Neil Melanson to sort of bring that back a little bit. It's a positive for him long-term because it makes guys have to worry about, is he going to get in on a takedown? That opens up things for his striking. But this was really what I expected from the fight. And then again, instead of letting that second round knockout finish stand as what we talk about, AJ comes past press row and says something along the lines of, now write about that shit. If you want to write something bad, write something good, and has another one of these just doesn't get it moments at the press conference. Yep. Where it's like you couldn't leave well enough alone. You couldn't have us just come out here and talk about, hey, your wrestling looked good. Talk about the relationship with Neil Melanson. Got a knockout over a dude that's only lost once before that. Puts you right back in the mix. Big fight coming up next month. Are you going to stay in shape? The first thing people want to ask him is, dude, what the hell are you beaking off at reporters on press row for? Like, just leave it alone. And the whole idea of, if you're going to write something bad, write something good too, is just, you clearly don't understand how media works. It's not a one for one deal. Is there more negative written about Anthony Johnson? Absolutely. Has he given us reason to write more negative about him lately? 100%. And so it's just another one of those elements of this card that could have been better, but instead kind of just falls flat.
Well, again, and incredibly stupid because, you know, people would have written good things about his performance. They didn't need to be told that, right? So that aside, and assuming that, you know, there aren't more issues like this that flare up that force the UFC's hand into doing something, where exactly does this leave Anthony Johnson? Because, you know, I know that until, and I still don't understand why this many months after the situation, there seems to be no more clarity on John Jones's position. But, you know, I thought Johnson had a shot against Jones. And let's not forget, I thought he was going to put Daniel Cormier away in the first round because he rocked him. He had him wobbly. And then, you know, Cormier's wrestling prowess took over. But dare I say, one more shot lands from Johnson and he's holding that belt. Where does he fit now in the light heavyweight? Again, throw the personal garbage out of the way, you know, assuming he can keep his head straight. Where does he slot in here for you?
Yeah, setting the outside the cage stuff aside, he very much is that number one, number two contender. We talk a lot about tune-up fights. Man, I would love to see John Jones and Anthony Johnson as a comeback fight, sort of some point early next year, provided John's stuff gets worked out and he does come back. I think he's established that he's above that sort of, even above that number five cutoff spot of Rashad Evans and Ryan Bader, though he hasn't faced either. I mean, you look at the going out and blistering Alex Gustafsson in Sweden. You look at knocking Daniel Cormier down in the first round with that first big shot, dominating Jimmy Manuel last weekend. He's very much that wild card guy to me that, like you, made a fight with Jones a little more interesting because that power is very, very real and amongst the best in the sport, not just the division.
Well, I don't, as a fight fan, I hear what you're saying. Man, would that be an awesome fight to see Jones return on? But the UFC, it doesn't make sense, does it? When we talk about burning, like to put Jones in a position where you're risking that rematch with Cormier, like to me, when you look at what they just did, sort of using Manu as a rehabilitation fight for Johnson, don't you think it makes more sense from their point of view? I'm not saying from a fan's point of view, to have Jones come a little easier mark, because you know the one thing with John Jones, and we all know, anyone who listens to the podcast knows how much I admire him as a fighter. He doesn't have knockout power. Johnson right. does, and I think that's a really risky fight for John Jones to take.
Oh, it absolutely is, and I don't think that's where we'll see the UFC go. I think, provided Daniel Cormier still has the title, or really even if Alex Gustafsson has it and John comes back with either of those two at the top, we'll see an immediate title shot for him because he never lost the belt. If they do want to do sort of a tune-up, get right, reintroduce him kind of moment, I think they would do something a little safer, maybe a Rashad Evans, a Ryan Bader, someone in that group that, you know, you would expect him to win. There aren't as many question marks or danger spots as there would be with a guy like AJ. But if they want to just, you know, not give John any kind of favoritism or not just hand him a title fight without handing him a title fight, I tell you, I think a lot of people would tune into Fox to see John Jones and Anthony Johnson throw down.
Oh, tune into Fox. Absolutely. And I was just thinking that myself, actually, as we go through the theme of what's a pay-per-view, what's a fight night, you know, where should these events lie? You know, maybe they're going to want Jones to sell pay-per-views because that is what it's all about. But, you know, to me, a John Jones coming back against a Rashad Evans or a Ryan Bader on a fight night with Daniel Cormier doing commentary, you know, assuming that was going to lead up to, okay, now you're going to have the rematch at the next pay-per-view, would do killer business to me. But then again, it's going to be such a huge story when he comes back that that's probably a pay-per-view fight anyway. But, yeah, light heavy is one of those divisions where you really only look at that there's two, three guys in the mix who you think could seriously win the title. But, you know, stranger things have happened. And again, that looks right now as if it's months away rather than weeks. So let's get in. Oh, let's finish with the card a little bit. You mentioned Pennington, but also Paige VanZant, another fighter there's a lot of hype over. She got the result. She's showcased a little bit. What did you think of her performance, and really, where do you think she's headed?
I thought she looked great. It was the performance I really expected going in. I said I expect it to be very similar to her fight with Kaylin Curran, which was her UFC debut in Austin, Texas, where it's that relentless forward pressure of Paige VanZant. We saw some improvement in terms of technique and sort of the cleanliness of the way she fights. It's not as wild and crazy as it was in that debut, but she's still raw. She's still green. There's still holes. And so I really hope that the UFC continues to take sort of the slow build and not rush things too much, because I do think the potential is there. I think the upside is obvious. You look at what she's accomplished. You look at the attention she's generated. And then you couple that with the fact that she's 21 and already has 3 wins in the UFC and things like that. You can see the growth. Just don't rush it. Don't go too far too soon and burn yourself. I think it's crazy that people want to compare to Ronda Rousey. Like, the only things that are comparable to me are traffic for websites. Like,
sorry, Ronda back up, Rousey's, but just back up on that a little bit. Spence, you cut out a little bit there. So the comparables to Rousey are?
I think the comparables to Rousey are just that they're both blonde American female fighters, and that's about it. Like, and they generate traffic on websites. I mean, Ronda is a world-class athlete and has been her entire life. Paige is 21 and just getting started in her career. I think the point I made on Keyboard Kimura earlier this week was that Ronda has more title defenses than Paige has victories. And so let's pump the brakes on she could be the next Ronda Rousey. We threw that title on Rose Namajunas coming out of Tough. That didn't work well. Let's just appreciate the one that we have right now and not just hold Paige to this championship standard right away because she doesn't want to be there. We don't hold male prospects that have 3 wins in the UFC and some clear, obvious holes in their game to those standards of, like, would Aljamain Sterling beat TJ Dillashaw? Let's not do it to her. Let's appreciate what we're seeing, which is a young fighter continuing to grow, continuing to get better, has some upside, is drawing some interest, but not go overboard and make it she's a superstar and needs to be main eventing on Fox and throw her in with in matchups that are just too far ahead of her at this point.
So this kind of what we've flirted with here, talking about the pay-per-view and was it worthy or who should be fighting or what's a good matchup for them, leads me into speculation about fights that have just been announced, when and where, how the UFC is plotting its course. This is as close as it gets to an off-season for UFC. I'm not suggesting they're scared of the NFL, but it seems to me like the NHL pushed their training camps back. Everyone wants to avoid the start of NFL season. Everyone, every sport, they do not want to go up against, you know, being buried in sports sections and websites and newscasts and everything. So we do have some downtime. There's a fight night coming up next at the end of September in a couple of weeks. There aren't a lot of events here, but maybe that's a good thing. I hear a lot of people in the debate that raged on sort of in social media locally and over the airwaves was, oh, UFC is past it. No one's as interested in it anymore. And it's the response I got from a lot of people is that it's watered down, that there's too many events. And that's a funny line to draw when people are willing to watch baseball 162 games a year, but and seem to be Blue Jays crazy. But this is a bit of a slower time for UFC. What is on your radar? It seems to me like they're picking more the bigger spike events through the fall and into the winter, where you're going to get an event that's more noteworthy rather than having a constant stream of events.
Yeah, and I think for me that's a positive. I've always sort of been an advocate of, if you want to do, you know, if you want to keep that 12-13 pay-per-view model, that maybe running another 25 fight night events so that there are a few more breaks in the schedule. And it's not just week after week after week. It gives some time for people to marinate on some matchups and take some advanced looks and get excited about stuff that's coming up. Like, I love the fact that I've got 3 consecutive weekends here. 1, I get to watch football. 2, I don't have to be poured into a fight night event throughout the week. I can sit here and start looking ahead at UFC 192 in Houston at the start of next month. I can get excited for the return to Dublin and then going to Etihad Stadium in Melbourne. And I think that's something that hopefully the UFC is going to learn from a little bit. I think this year has really been a rebound year for them in terms of pay-per-view numbers overall, the last event notwithstanding. And a lot of that has been finding the right stars. So someone like Ronda Rousey at UFC 190, or having these big events like UFC 187 and 189 that just are able to capture a larger attention and a larger audience than rolling out a pay-per-view every 3 weeks, every 4 weeks, regardless of who's on top. And hopefully that will mean maybe not a decrease in the schedule. I don't think the UFC is ever going to come back from the number of events that they have, because there is a market for it on Fox Sports One. They've scaled back in terms of Fight Pass this year, but we could see a few more going forward. But if they just continue with this pattern of bigger pay-per-views, kind of really giving us pretty big events throughout the rest of this year, I think things are going to continue to rebound. And yes, there's some hypocrisy maybe between, oh my God, the UFC is watered down, but let me watch, you know, Mariners game 112 or the 78th Canucks game of the season or whatever the case may be. But that's the way it's always going to be. There's some people that just don't get fighting and they want to find some way to justify their not liking it rather than just saying, you know, it's not my cup of tea.
I guess in many ways this is, I mean, while it's great to have unpredictability and change, within your sport, there was something to be said when you had, you know, Kane, or even prior to that, Brock Lesnar, John Jones, Anderson Silva, GSP, and every time they fought, they were such big names that it bled out into the casual sports fan that SportsCenter would do more UFC stuff because they were big names. I mean, Daniel Cormier, look, I think it's awesome to see him prove again to me that he's a bit of a jackass. Everyone always lauds him about how great and how humble he is, but I thought it was really disrespectful in his comments to Alexander Gustafsson, which Gustafsson's now fired back on. You know, this is how much of that is helping sell the next pay-per-view, I don't know. But Cormier is one of those guys who, inside the game, people will know and respect and definitely want to see him. But Daniel Cormier by himself isn't attracting the type of attention that Jon Jones was. So I don't know how much of this is showmanship or if this is his real true character, if he's trying to sell tickets or what it is. But, you know, that to me is where the UFC is right now. When you look at the true stars, it's why Conor McGregor made so much more for that last fight, even as an interim champion, than we saw Lawler and McDonald make to practically put their lives on the line with such a brutal fight. You know,
yeah, the DC stuff, DC is a huge pro wrestling fan, so some of this is very much pro wrestling promo cutting.
Do you believe
on
that
Alex
stuff
Gustafson.
He said?
What's that?
Do you believe that this is just to sell tickets, or do you think that there's a little bit? And I have no idea. No,
I believe some of it is very much trying to tweak Alex and throw him off a little bit of like, everybody wants to talk about how great this guy is, but the fight they always reference is where he came up short. And I think that's sort of a valid point. Like, it's a legitimate point that you can make towards Alex Gustafsson. And if it pisses him off and makes him fight angry, that definitely helps DC. I also think it's great to give some kind of soundbite that starts a back and forth, that have websites writing about it and have people talking about it on Twitter, rather than, you know, the standard, this is going to be a good fight and Alex is a tough opponent.
But yeah, I mean, it's, again, that's the part of it that's good for business. But I've had this experience before, and I know you and I have talked about it, that everyone seems to laud Daniel Cormier for being this classy guy when everyone was going after Jones for being a scumbag. And yet, I know there's no criminal activity or any of that stuff. I think it just comes off as not only disrespectful in a sport that does have a lot of honor, the way he talked about everyone, you know, he's kind of tarring, you know, Anthony Johnson and you know, probably Rashad Evans, is saying, I don't want to play around with these other fighters. I want a real fight. I want to get back to that rematch. So I get it. Some of it is, I'll see you in Cleveland, Undertaker. But, you know, some of it is also, I don't know. I think there's a level of respect that's missing there. So I guess I'm just trying to figure out what's the showmanship and who's the real DC.
Oh, I think there's a level of it, and there's pieces of it, that DC is a lifelong athlete and a lifelong world-class athlete that just knows he's better or thinks he's better than everyone else. And the one guy that he looks at in MMA right now as that challenge and the fight that matters to him is that rematch with John. And he's not going to just do the, I think all these guys are great and I want to fight all of them and they're all wonderful people. He's going to take that element of, I have a belt in front of me. I've beaten everyone except John. I'm better than all of you. This is going to help sell me, build me, gain me that momentum to to hopefully get that rematch that I want so desperately.
Well, the one thing I will say about this, and it's, you know, it's not till October, but that this stuff does sell that pay-per-view. And that's, again, we look at what we just had on order for $70. And yet on this card, you've also got Hendricks and Woodley, you know, Bader and Evans. And I always like it when you have a title fight and then you have two other, you know, top 10 fighters in the same weight class on the same card.
Yep.
They tend to do that with heavyweights more than anyone else. You know, there's some other good fighters on there, but you have plucked some fights that go on all the way through to the winter that have really got your attention. Some stuff we knew about, but it's been moved around. What is on your radar for the next 6 months or so? What should fans really be gearing themselves up to be excited about?
I'm really looking forward. I mean, obviously there's fights that stand out that I think everybody would join me in being excited for, like Aldo McGregor, like Rafael Dos Anjos and Donald Cerrone for the lightweight title. The return of Khabib Nurmagomedov. The ones that are sort of a little bit sly and under the radar that I'm really looking forward to. I really want to see Dustin Poirier and Joe Duffy in Dublin, because I think they're two guys in for me, the deepest, most competitive division in the UFC, the lightweight ranks, that the winner becomes a top 15 guy and we sort of find out which one of them is the real deal. Maybe they both are and they both become contenders for next year. Obviously, Joe Duffy has the tie-in of being the last guy to defeat Conor McGregor. He was the one guy at the press conference that kind of just sat there last Friday kind of laughing, and it seemed like it was I got to beat this guy and face this guy without any of this nonsense, and it was great. He's not the one clinging to the Conor McGregor situation anymore. He's already beyond that and in a different division and on to bigger and better. So that fight really interests me. Kelvin Gastelum coming back to welterweight is definitely one that interests me. I got to talk to him over the weekend. He's excited about it. That's a fight with Matt Brown that really establishes Kelvin, if he wins, as a top five guy, which is a big swing from being banished from the division last time out. I also think Benson Henderson fighting at welterweight again in Seoul, Korea, against Thiago Alves is super intriguing, because he looked good last time out against Brandon Thatch, getting that victory. Alves is a veteran. Yes, he's coming off the loss to Carlos Condit, but Carlos is a top three, top five guy fighting for the title next time out. So if Ben can get another win, he becomes an intriguing player at 170 going into next year. So in addition to the obvious ones that have belts and sort of bad blood attached to them, those are a couple of the lesser, smaller fight night events that I'm really looking forward to.
Are there certain weight classes that you're liking the way it shapes up in the next 6 to 12 months? I mean, obviously we talked about heavyweight, which is sort of a mess right now the way it's going, But honestly, when I look at lightweight, where you do have Dos Anjos, and then, you know, Pettis is a reclamation project in here. Everyone thought he was unbeatable before his last fight. You have Cowboy, as you mentioned, Nurmagomedov coming back. Michael Johnson was robbed in his last appearance, so I still think he's a guy there who can do some damage. You know, you look at welterweight as well, where you've got Lawler, Hendricks, McDonald, Woodley, Condit. You know, you're really kind of guessing at who's going to fight who, and there's some real intrigue. Are there any other weight classes that you look at and are really interested to see how this all plays out over the next 12 months?
Those are the two that really jump out the most, just because there are so many options and so many compelling fights within that top 10, top 15. I mean, at welterweight, you even get a fight like Damian Maia and Gunny Nelson, number 6 versus number 11. So they still have a couple fights before they could maybe challenge for a title, but they're two intriguing guys. I think featherweight, depending on what happens between Aldo and McGregor, could be interesting if the Brazilian retains and continues to rule as king. Then I think, you know, provided if Frankie Edgar beats Chad Mendes, he'll get a second shot. I think Max Holloway is very much an interesting player in that division. I think Ricardo Lamas can continue to be sort of that top five tough out for everybody coming up. And then other than that, I mean, I really do look at women's strawweight a little bit, just because I think the group kind of ahead of Paige VanZant, and we'll learn a little bit more about Rose Namajunas next month in Houston. I'm not sure that she's really necessarily ready to be in that top five mix, but I look at eventual fights with Claudia Gadelha and Carla Esparza and Jess Penne, who we saw was tougher than nails in her loss to Joanna Jędrzejczyk. I think that's a division that has a chance to really become similar to lightweight, where there's a lot of depth, a lot of really good fights. And this next year, we'll see some of that shaking out and sort of solidifying of the division.
Yeah, again, if you had taken me back 12 months ago and you look at some of these divisions, I'd never guess that we'd be where we are now. So, you know, obviously things are going to change and we'll have a different perspective on it. But, you know, when I look at the other weight classes, there are some awfully thin ones. And light heavy to me, which 2 years ago was the most competitive division out there, because it just seemed like all these guys were jockeying to take on the all-time great. They really need either Jones to come back or almost a Gustafsson upset of Cormier, because it seems to get real thin after the top one or two. I mean, it's almost, as we've talked about heavyweight before, like if Kane's... The one thing that's keeping Kane, that intrigue in heavyweight is, oh, well, how much did the Mexico City affect him? And if he fought in Vegas, how would that be? Because heavyweights, really, you go, well, how many guys are true contenders? If you do look at light heavy, so you got Cormier waiting for Jones, but then, you know, we've already seen what he did to Johnson. And if he handles Gustafsson, then is Teixeira exciting anyone for a title shot? Bader, you know, that he's number four. Rashad Evans, OSP's coming off a loss. Man, there may be a shot for Rampage Jackson to climb up the standings here. That's a division that needs either a young guy to come out of nowhere or an upset somewhere along the line.
Yeah, there's a few divisions that are unfortunately kind of in that spot. As much as I think the top end of middleweight is really good with Chris Weidman and Luke Rockhold fighting at the end of the year. Jacare Souza and Yoel Romero on that card as well. You get below that and you have just a bunch of guys that we sort of know where their ceiling is, and it would be a bit of a force to define them as contenders again, and you would need several wins. Bantamweight, unfortunately, is kind of in the same position. I mean, TJ Dillashaw has beaten, stopped Henan Burrell twice. He's got a fight scheduled with Dominic Cruz for early January. Cruz is, you know, the ultimate question mark. He's fought once in the last 4 years, two repaired knees, a groin injury in there. We have 61 seconds of tape where he beat Takeo Mizugaki over the last 4 years to kind of judge whether he'll be able to come back and challenge TJ Dillashaw. But then outside of that, you have just sort of guys that are waiting to come up. Aljamain Sterling is a great prospect. Thomas Almeida is a great prospect. I don't know that they're ready yet. I would love to see some fights with some of these more veteran guys, or just throw one of them into the fire. I asked TJ about it last week and said, like, you kind of got a little bit of a hot shot opportunity because just the way things worked out. If something happened to Cruz and that fight couldn't happen, would you be okay with fighting a guy like Aljo or a guy like Thomas Almeida? And he was like, yeah, bring it on, whatever. I'll fight anybody. I need to get paid. And so, if one or both of those guys can step up and Michael McDonald can come back and be healthy and prove to be a contender again, then that division suddenly perks up. But right now it feels like we're still relying on Henan Burrell, Dominic Cruz, and Uriah Faber to be names in that division. And we sort of know where Burrell and Faber fit and have no idea how to judge Cruz. So it just becomes difficult, and it puts TJ in a tough spot.
Speaking of Faber, and I know the last Ultimate Fighter you had a hard time kind of getting into, and I think that even though I like the team versus team aspect, it does seem like the whole franchise needs something to freshen it up a little bit. Did you catch the start of the new season? Do you care? Are you going to watch it?
I did watch it. I got a teaser. I actually got a screener file from the UFC over the weekend and watched it before last night, just because I knew the chances of me sitting down and watching it with commercials last night were pretty slim. Commercials have become the bane of my existence. I am interested just because I think the guys at Team Alpha Male will be phenomenal coaches. I mean, Connor is always interesting. He's always an element that you kind of want to see. We've had a couple good national rivalries or nation rivalries in the past, or as it is this time around, the whole of Europe versus the United States. And so I'll watch it. I mean, there were some good fights. There were some good fights to get into the house. I think they're usually, that's one of my favorite episodes always for the Ultimate Fighter, is that first one, because you get a bunch of good action because guys are going so hard to get that opportunity. I think there are a couple of good prospects on it this year that I do want to continue to watch. Ryan Hall, who is an elite black belt jiu-jitsu player who got a submission victory to get into the house. Chris Gritzmacher, who trains with the guys out at the MMA lab, Ben Henderson, and coach John Crouch, is another guy that I'll be watching. I found it interesting and had a little chuckle that Conor McGregor's sort of the Robin to his Batman, Artem Lobov, the prospect killer, had a great fight. It was a bloody back and forth, but didn't make it into the house. And so I want to continue to see. I've heard a lot of stuff about Conor's not necessarily there. He said, I'm not here to coach. I'm here to facilitate things for them and show them what they can have, which kind of sounds weird, but whatever. So this is the first season in a while. And I got a couple like, no, we're not just hyping this up. I'm not just telling you this because it's the new season. You're going to actually want to watch this season from fairly reliable sources. Well, so I will watch The Ultimate Fighter this year.
Yeah, if Conor McGregor's the bait because they want him on TV as much as possible, but you get to learn about some good young fighters who are going to have a bit of a future in the UFC, then I think the show achieves its purpose.
Yeah, and that's the big thing to me. Like, I actually like that they're getting away a little bit from coaches fighting, because it felt like then the coaches had to be the focal point. And that, to me, shouldn't be the focal point of this show. It should be about sort of letting people get to know some of these fighters that you're going to need in the future, that you're going to have on your roster and showcase in the future. So if we can get two or three guys, and it's early to determine at this point whether any of these guys have sort of elite prospect ability, but I'm intrigued right now after one episode, so I'll be back for more for sure.
Oh, that's great. Now, with Mayweather fighting this weekend, I'm so glad that we haven't touched on the fact that Ronda Rousey / Mayweather, it's such a tiresome argument, as we have talked about it before. It's such a ridiculous topic, but yet whenever both of their names come up now, it seems like they're tied to each other. So I'm glad we didn't discuss that. But anything else on your radar from this week before we sign off?
Like I said, excited to see some of these fight announcements. Happy that Lawler Condit is back on the schedule for early January, back in Vegas. Probably not going to do that one. That would be a lot of Vegas in a very short period of time. I've been there 3 times in 5 months. I will be back for three Vegas shows in 3 days in December. So I'm going to press pause coming out of that one. New Year's in Vegas, even when you're staying at Keyboard Kimura HQ, the Hooters Casino Hotel, becomes very expensive. And I mean, listen, just I wrote about it today on Keyboard Kimura. It's weird to me that people get pumped for Dillashaw Cruz, but not so excited for DJ Dodson too. But I'm excited for that fight because I think it's the fight TJ Dillashaw probably needs to become a bigger star. And I love that they're taking it from pay-per-view, even taking it from Fox and just putting it on Fox Sports 1, pairing it with an NFL playoff game and giving two guys that deserve it and a division that needs it a bigger platform to start the year.
Okay, well, great stuff, Spencer. Spencer mentioned Keyboard Kimura. You can find that at theprovince.com. You can also find Spencer on Twitter at SpencerKite, K-Y-T-E, where you'll get links to all sorts of his stuff that he does. So thanks for listening, everyone, and we will be back next week.
You've been listening to Keyboard Kimura, the official mixed martial arts podcast of The Province. Read the Keyboard Kimura blog on theprovince.com, follow them on Twitter at Keyboard Kimura, or visit them on Facebook at facebook.com/Keyboard Kimura.